They must be coming on pretty soon.
Yeah. So Till just started the recording, so that's, I was going to remind him about that if he hadn't.
Yeah, he has to do something to make the recording thing happen, so it usually means he's on.
Your slides, as you have sent me yesterday an email with slides, so I've replaced the slides which were already there by these ones.
Okay, I have sent you another email saying don't worry, because you replaced them with identical ones, actually. But,
I thought they were identical? Oh, what?
I hadn't realised I could update them myself when I sent you the email.
Ah, yes.
When did you update them, Till?
Yesterday night.
Okay, fine. I picked him up this morning. I just want to make sure you hadn't done it this morning.
Oh, Till?
Yes?
Is it, Glenn says you're going to be presenting some slides about colour management this afternoon. Is that
colour management I don't have slides for. I have hoped that some guy of the colour management, Michael Vrell or someone else, would present something there.
I thought Michael said yesterday he left you some slides. No?
No.
Oh,
he has, and the color management inside GoScript he has presented yesterday also as part of the GoScript session.
It's very possible we'll quit it now.
Yes.
I've got some slides from Richard Hughes. Richard Hughes won't be
dialing in. If you could present them today in the afternoon. Because it seems that Richard told that he wanted to call in, but he didn't call in.
That's right, yeah.
Yes. When he calls in today in the afternoon for the color management session, it's possible that he calls in only for the color management session. Then let him. Then we let him present these slides.
If you have an email for him, send him an email right now.
Yes.
I don't think he'll be able to call in tonight.
And otherwise, you present these slides.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Put them into that session, upload them and link them into that session.
Or just send them to Phil, okay. Yes. Phil can do that.
Thank you. ready?
I'm ready, yeah.
Yes, then we can start.
Okay. Does everyone have the slides then?
Yes, the slides are now on air.
We're projecting them.
And sharing them in the room.
So I was going to go through the status of the printer configuration tool, System Config Printer. I originally wrote this for the Fedora project years ago. Okay, next slide. Things are changing. With GNOME 3, which was just released this week, there's a new printing integration that's been included in it. And part of that is configuring printing. And there's a quick screenshot of the kind of thing that it looks like now, and it may look quite familiar to people, that this sort of design. The idea was to keep it quite simple. I haven't done the work on this. It's been done by Marek Karzik at Red Hat and others. I think maybe Callum Pringle did some of the design. I think he's at Canonical. I will be talking about GNOME 3 system settings as well as System Config Printer, just so that we know the two different things and how they relate to each other. Next slide. So where does it leave System Config Printer with all the new work in GNOME 3? I've been told that the system settings printers module in GNOME 3 is meant to be very simple and straightforward, and you click plus, you click add, job done, without asking too many questions. And it's not meant to replace System Config Printer, which is a more complete tool. So for example, there's not any plan at the moment to have anything about printer sharing or whether to preserve job history or browse polling or any of that kind of stuff. But we'll see. I remember when I started doing System Config Printer, that was going to be very simple then. I think it depends if the design is set in stone, or how much users will clamor for extra functionality. System Config Printer also, in writing it, there's a lot of things that I did wrong that I know the right way of doing now. So I've been trying to help Marek out with some of the pitfalls of that, specifically with things like monitoring job status and that kind of thing, using subscriptions. And also particularly with choosing the best driver for a particular printer. And I wrote up a blog entry about that a few weeks ago. It details the whole story of how you have to get to the best driver if you don't know anything beforehand about which the best driver might be, and you have to work it out on your own as a program. And the other thing is that there are other desktops than GNOME, of course. I do know that the KDE project is working on their own kind of printer configuration separate from System Config Printer. I don't know the status of that. But again, it's great. Let's have better configuration interfaces. But we can learn lessons from the methods that have been used in this one that's grown from what was a very simple print conf program back in the day. Okay, next slide. So I wanted to talk a little bit more about the GNOME 3 printing integration. There's no need now for the System Config Printer applet. The GNOME shell itself provides user notifications on the screen for whenever a printer has been connected to the system and configured or removed, or when you print a job, or when there's something to say about that job, like that the printer isn't switched on or something, or when the job's finished. It also provides the automatic installation of driver packages, which the System Config Printer applet used to do. And it does this using package kit, using the RPM tags that I spoke about last year. And then there's the System Settings Printers module. The idea with GNOME 3 is that there's a System Settings application which gathers together all of the different sort of control knobs and dials and that kind of thing. So there's one for printers, and it's just for simple printer administration and job operations, seeing what jobs they're on, cancelling them and so forth. Okay, next slide. Let's have a quick look at it. So this is the System Settings screen. After you've gone to System Settings and then clicked on Printers, this is what it looks like. So you see a list of printers there. In the bottom left of the screen is a button that starts off saying Unlock, and you click on it, and it asks you for your administrator password. And then once you've done that, you're ready to go. You're ready to switch the buttons. There's this top right. There's an on-off switch for enabling and disabling the printer. I've noticed that after I did the screenshot, I noticed the supply level is blank. I should have chosen a printer that reports ink levels, but it does have a little ink level display there. Okay, next slide. So this is what it looks like when you add a printer, and it's quite a lot simpler than the new printer wizard in System Config Printer. And it's meant to be. So first of all, just adding a local printer, I had an Epson printer plugged in here, and it says, well, look, you've got this printer here, and it's chosen a name already, so it's Stylus D78. And if I click Add there, then it adds the printer, and I'm not asked anything else. It just adds the printer. And it's very intentional that I'm not asked anything else. And this is actually quite a hard thing to do, and I'll come on to why that is later. And there's more work to be done in that System Settings module about that. So that's the design of how that looks. And for next slide, for a network printer, so far all that's implemented is finding cut printers. But normal network discovery will be along shortly, I'm told. Okay, next slide. This is showing print jobs. If you remember back on the main screen there was a list of how many jobs there were, and it was 0, and there was a show button. When you press show, that part of the screen changes to this, and it's just a very simple list of jobs, and you click on them, and you can press the play button to resume them, or the pause button to pause them, and stop to cancel them. And that's it. It's a very simple design. And quite intentionally so. Does anyone have any questions so far about the GNOME 3 printing integration?
Here we are.
Okay. Okay, so next slide. So this is now talking about System Config Printer. So there's a new version of System Config Printer now, 1.3, released that this year. The main improvements over 1.2 are to do with the driver selection. And there's three main reasons that it's better. And they're just there on the screen. The first one about XML rules for constructing a driver preference list. Previously, there were hard-coded rules in the source code for a given printer, what are the best types of driver to try and use. Well, I came up with a way of expressing all that in XML so that it's a bit more flexible in being able to describe what types of drivers there are and which ones should be used on which type of printer. The second thing is better model name comparison. Until came up with a lovely simple idea that I'll talk about shortly. To make it easier to do some fuzzy matching with printer models. And the third one is to do with an idea that George Liu came up with with if you have a printer that has an optional PostScript module, what do you do in that situation? And I'll talk about that in a bit more detail later. Okay, next slide. So the XML rules. What I wanted to have was a way of having something like Freematic's XML database saying about recommended drivers, but that was able to talk about HP cups and native cups drivers and, you know, random PPDs that you might have on the system. A way of being able to talk about drivers that were not Freematic drivers. So I came up with this idea of being able to have classifying drivers into types of driver. So you might have a whole load of Freematic drivers, but you can classify them all as, these are Freematic drivers. And these ones over here are native CUPS drivers. And of those, these are provided by CUPS, and these are provided by Gutenprint, and these are provided by HP CUPS, and so on. And basically having a preference order between them, depending on what type of printer it is. So for a particular make and model of printer, like say it's an HP printer, well then you might prefer an HP driver. But for a different type of printer, if it's, there might be an HP driver that will drive it, but it might be preferable to use, say, Gutenprint. So the idea was, first of all, build a preference list of which types of driver we want to be able to use for a particular printer, then classify the drivers that are available for it, and then sort them into that order. Okay, next slide. I hope I haven't made this slide a bit too complicated, but I'll take you through it. This is basically a bit of a graphical way of showing what I just said. So we start in the top left corner there, and we've got a box which is the information we have from the printer. We have the device ID, and we have the make and model string. We might have one or other of them, or we might have both. Hopefully we'll have both. There are situations where we'll only have one or the other. So along the left-hand side there, the next thing that happens is the XML rules are used to, based on the device ID and or the make and model, decide on a driver types list, a preferred order of types of driver. So for example, going back to the HP, using HP drivers on HP printers thing, if the device ID MFG field says HP or Hewlett-Packard, then we might want to choose HP cups in preference to other drivers. But after that stage, we have a list, an ordered list of types of driver. Okay, the next thing that happens is going across the top, System Config Printer looks for among all of the drivers that are available, trying to work out, well, which ones of the actual drivers we have can possibly drive this printer. So it uses lots of different ways of doing this. It looks for device ID matches. It looks for make and model string matches and fuzzy matches even. You know, if it's not quite the same model number, but it's a very close model number, well, maybe that will work. And it uses the CMD field of the device ID to look for generic drivers that might work. So once we have these two things, we've got the list of available drivers. In the top right-hand corner there, we've got some specific driver URIs. And we've got, in the bottom left, the list of driver types. The next thing to do is, on the right-hand side there, going down from the top box to the bottom box, we just classify the available drivers into what types they are. And then once we've sorted those into the order that we had the driver types in, then we have the drivers themselves in preference order. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Any questions? Okay, well, I hope that means that it makes sense. Or
it
if not,
does make sense. Thank you. Sorry, I spoke too quietly.
Okay. Okay, next slide. This is Till's idea for how to do some fuzzy matching of printer names. System Config Printer employs a lot of different algorithms. One is going through and looking for a string of numbers, taking it as a model number, and then looking for matches based on all digits, first of all. If it can't find that, then it tries changing the last digit to zero, and so on. So you can get, like, LaserJet 4000 series matching a 4010. It uses lots of things like that. This is one of the algorithms that it now uses, which is just use a normalized, spelled out way of writing the names, as though you were saying them out loud, and compare them that way. So thanks Till for that. That's, so here we've got some examples. If you've got the Epson PM-A820, well, that's the same as the Epson PM-A820. If I'm saying it out loud, I wouldn't really say the dash. You just have to put it all in lowercase for better comparison, and break apart all the words into different words. It really is that simple. But it does help. Okay, next slide. So the last improvement that I wanted to talk about was eliminating PPDs based on the command set field of the device ID. And the reason, this is the problem that we wanted to solve. This is George who spoke to me about this. There are printers out there that have optional PostScript modules. So it's the same model of printer, but depending on whether or not you fitted this extra part, it can speak PostScript or it can't speak PostScript. This could be true of PDF or any other page description language. But the problem is, well, how do we know which driver to use then? Okay, next slide. Well, the way you tell these printers apart is by looking at their CMD fields, because they declare what page description languages they're able to deal with. So you can just look at those. So we know which printer can speak PostScript and which one can't. But how do we know which driver is going to send PostScript and which one isn't? Okay, next slide. Okay, we're in the PPD.
Tim?
Did someone say something?
No, I just wanted to interject something here in case you weren't aware of it. There is a recent PWG standard from 2009, I believe, for standardizing the values put in the CMD field so they are easier to match, so manufacturers don't use a variety of odd spellings of PDL names and so on.
I don't know how well that's being adhered to.
The point of it was to, in time, make this sort of matching better. I'll send you a link, Ken.
But in general, the program should also support existing variations so that old PPDs and old printers stay supported.
Right,
but all the ones which are standardized must be in so that all PPDs and printers of the future get supported.
Yeah, and it which means you need sort of a list of variant spellings and, you know, manufacturer hyphen PostScript and all of the other variant spellings to do fuzzy matchings with. But the idea was to improve that sort of automatic configuration.
And in addition, you can pass also this through my model name normalization so that at least upper lowercase and white space variations
and hyphens
or so are automatically handled.
Yeah.
Okay. Carry on, Tim.
So the approach that we came up with was, well, the printer says whichever command string it likes, and actually for this mechanism it can be anything. It can be PostScript, you know, hyphenated if they want to spell it that way. The key thing is, given what the printer says, the PPD must contain that same command field in its 1284 device ID attribute. So here's an example with a Ricoh printer. It's got the PPD has got this line in it, star 1284 device ID, and the primary is to have the MFG and MDL fields. But if you also have the CMD field in there, meaning this particular PPD is going to produce this particular command set, then it makes the driver matching much easier. So this is a convention, it's not something that's mandated by any particular standard. But it just seems to make sense, I think. So this system config printer would interpret this to mean this particular PPD requires the PostScript module in the printer to be installed. And more specifically, it requires the PostScript keyword to be in the target device's CMD field.
Tim?
If it's not there, then the PPD is eliminated. Yes?
IEEE 1284 actually does make the CMD field mandatory.
What I'm talking about here not being mandatory is, first of all, having the 1284 device ID in the PPD file.
Ah, right.
And secondly, in that attribute value, having the CMD field in there.
Yeah.
And thirdly, for semantically, that to mean that this particular driver will produce that particular command set.
Thank you.
Okay, next slide. So that's more or less all I have right now. I think that all the actions happening in GNOME 3 right now, the printer's module for the system settings is all relatively new. I think there will be changes and improvements, and there's certainly some more work to be done in it. For example, I don't know yet. I think it's not implemented. I think that the automatic authentication of jobs is not yet implemented in it. This is something that the System Config Printer applet used to do. And what it is looking for a job that's been held because this authentication info required, and then displaying a little dialogue to the user for asking for the password. And I'm sure there will be other improvements as GNOME 3 is sort of rolled out and tested by people. So really it's a case of keeping eyes on that and seeing what happens. And I'm not really sure how in the long term it will affect System Config Printer. Maybe GNOME 3's tool will eventually replace it. Or maybe I'm not really sure at this stage which direction things will take. And talking about device IDs, I did mention this on Wednesday, that having a list of device IDs that are known to be correct would really be helpful, and particularly putting them in the PPDs for the drivers makes matching the drivers to the printers a much easier job. And that's all I have. So last slide, just any questions.
Is there a priority mechanism to where the GNOME 3 versus System Config Printer would be used to install, or it's just a matter of which dialogue you launched as the user?
Well, the GNOME 3 dialogue is the sort of the default dialogue, and when you plug in a printer, a USB printer, so you plug it in and switch it on, it would be part of System Config Printer that actually configures the queue, but GNOME 3 itself would be showing the notifications to the user. As for when you would use the System Config Printer tool instead of the GNOME 3 dialog, I think that's still being worked out. One of the things recently was that none of the previous sort of System Config tools that had been in the System Settings menu are visible currently in GNOME 3, and that's a bug, that it shouldn't be that way, but it currently is. It's actually quite hard at the moment to get to System Config Printer from GNOME 3, but it's something that I think we'll feel our way with and find out in time.
Okay, so the GNOME 3 won't configure a queue, for instance.
It will configure a queue. If you click on the add button on that dialogue, then it will, it can configure local queues at the moment and queues for remote cups servers. There's still some working out to be done. For example, it doesn't do, you know, those enhancements I've just been talking about. It doesn't do any of those presently. I think it uses a fairly simple matching algorithm. So there's improvement to be done there. And the blog article that I wrote about that in February has more details about what the steps are that you need to do, including things like there might be an installable options section in the PPD. If there is, no need to ask the user about it necessarily. You can send an auto configure job to it to get those settings set up. That's a CUPS feature, but it's not taken advantage of yet in GNOME.
One thing which I fear is that my and also your 10 years experience of printer setup tools and all the tricks like that network printers are appearing only once in the device list, independent which backend, and support for HPLIP and fuzzy matching of model names, driver decisions. This all is not in the GNOME 3 tool. And when suddenly the distro provides the GNOME 3 tool as default, and system config printer gets optional, perhaps even not installed by default, then the problems start again, which the user reported several years ago, and everything has to be re-implemented and rewritten. And I would not like to rewrite everything which I have once written in Perl for Mandriva, then written in Python for Ubuntu and Red Hat, now again in C for the GNOME tool.
Well, no, it's a concern. One approach I thought about was having a Dbus activatable service that hooked into the driver selection code of System Config Printer that GNOME 3 could use if it was available. But I think it'll just be a case of I think to start with, the design brief for the printers module of System Settings was set by someone who maybe doesn't have as much understanding of the depth of the problem, which is natural for anyone who hasn't you know spent a long time staring at it. So I think in the coming months we'll probably see, you know, a bit more recognition of the fact that it is actually quite a hard problem. But I think the problems will be solved in the GNOME 3 system settings panel. I mean, it's a lovely framework, and it's been designed nicely. And from the point of view of the user, which System Config Printer was from the point of view of, you know, me trying to make it so that people could actually configure their printers, I don't know the first thing about, you know, user interface design. I've been trying to make System Config Printer friendlier, but it's never been as friendly as this new GNOME 3 thing. So I think these things will be worked out. It is a bit of a concern that things might have to be re-implemented to some degree.
Yes, in Ubuntu I will vouch for System Config Printer and tell the GNOME guys that perhaps they should patch out the GNOME printer setup tool to avoid user reports of problems, and so that users continue with the interface they are used to in Ubuntu.
Or maybe, Tim, you mentioned it's a little hard to get System Config Printer visible from the GNOME 3 new interface, but if there was a simple button, you know, advanced printer tool, whatever, that would just be in GNOME 3, or anyway, it would be there and active if System Config Printer was available, then users could at least try that when the GNOME 3 interface hasn't, in fact, for instance, installed the right driver that actually works for their printer.
Yeah, that's definitely one way forward. Yeah, It can serve as a bit of a sort of an example, like a reference implementation of, this is a working configuration tool, to a large degree. I think that it's not necessarily, anyone's problem, but the people actually working on the new tool, of how to actually implement it. But they can look at the source code for system config printer and see what we did there. For clues on how to proceed. And I have been helping Marek out, and he's been quite responsive. We had a test day in Fedora for printing a couple of weeks ago, and it was largely testing out this new system settings code. And there were a lot of helpful bug reports that were found then, and I know Marek's been working hard at fixing the problems that were found then. So. I think it's new code at the moment, but give it a few weeks or a month or two, and I think it will shape up quite nicely.
Just to give a bit of a KDE viewpoint on this, the current situation in KDE is that we use System Config Printer with a KDE wrapper around it that's not as fully featured as the old GNOME interface. We've got a GSOC student who's applied to improve that situation. The work on that was all done by Canonical, by Jonathan Riddell. We do have someone who's written a native C++ printer config tool that has not yet been submitted to become an official part of KDE, and I must admit I'm not overly keen on us building and supporting our own tool for doing the back-end work of discovering printers and choosing which one's the right one to install and everything like that. Quite happy with the idea of having our own GUI, but the back-end stuff, I would very much prefer that there's a tool with an API that is common across all the platforms that, like Till said, you don't want to be recoding all this stuff, losing this 10 years worth of knowledge. So, from our perspective, we'd much rather have here's a tool that is, desktop neutral. It doesn't come with the GUI itself. You can implement the GUI if you like, but here's a, reference of the GUI. Here's all the services you will need that you don't have to be trying to re-implement yourself. And that's, simply because we don't have people with the knowledge or experience of doing printing work at that level, and we don't really want to have to find them.
So, in your preference, John, would be a wrap system to continue to wrap system printer.
Yes.
And if someone wants a different GUI, fine,
yes.
But don't have a regression loss of 10
yes.
years of knowledge.
Yes, I think the desktops, which are principally written in C or C++, they have to be more open for modules, for parts which are written in Perl or Python.
Yes. Yeah, that is one issue that we do have. I don't think I have a problem with it for the config module running in Python. That's not an issue. We do have a bit of an issue with the printer applet, which is there permanently on the desktop, is permanently pulling in Python. I can see how we could have a C++ applet that just, might directly query cut, say, what jobs are there, bypassing System Config Printer. But we don't really have a problem with, something, a single application or the config module loading being in Python. In fact, we're trying to encourage people to use a wider variety of languages for everything outside the core library.
Yes. Generally, one can use Python very well, especially as the computers get always faster and development in Python is much quicker than in C. For all applications which you call by a menu or so which you call up manually, but unfortunately you cannot use Python or Perl currently by a program which is either started on boot or on login, because there you have higher performance requirements, because they are started a lot on a modern system. And one wants to avoid that the Python or Perl interpreter is started, because this is a very big application.
Yeah.
and on boot or log in, one really perceives that something big gets loaded.
Yes, yeah, so actually, talking about that then, so first of all about KDE's approach, well, System Concrete Printer isn't going away anytime soon. I mean, it'll be around as long as people, you know, need to use it. One of the things I didn't mention in the slides about 1.3 is that a lot of the code has been reorganized and modularized a bit more, and it's been made callable by dbus. So, for example, if you want a new printer dialog, well, you can ask for one using dbus, using dbus calls. So you can do that from a C program or, you know, whatever you have. And in particular, I did this with the applet, which shows the little printer icon in the panel. And I did this so that you could have a stub program written in C, which just connects to CUPS to find out if you have any jobs queued, and waits until you do. And once you do, then it can launch the applet proper, which shows an icon about it. And so the idea with that was to reduce login time. And as it turned out, with going to 3, that's not been necessary because an existing program has taken over the job. But it's, you know, that's all there in 1.3 and ready to use if anyone needs to.
That sounds really good, actually.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. I should have written that into the slides, actually.
Make sure Jonathan and the Summer of Code student know about that. We build that as a project.
And do you actually have a student on that project?
Well, we've got one who's applied, and they seem to have a reasonable grasp of what needs doing and experience, so they look a fairly good candidate for getting approved.
Yes. Because today it ends the application period, and I didn't see students for open printing, only the one which I found beforehand for Fumatic, and another one who works on print accounting and management in networks, but no one for the dialogue and no one for JTAPI.
Yeah. So sitting here, I sent out emails to our GSOC list and put up a blog and, you know, put it on our list of projects as well, to try raise the profile of it a bit more. But
yeah, the printer setup tool is already more visible and so somewhat more attractive to the user than JTAPI. But the print dialog is also visible.
Maybe we need to give a GUI to Jason.
We need to attach some buzzwords around the technology.
It's a cloud job ticket, isn't it? Okay, so the KDE direction is to continue with System Config Printer for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, for the foreseeable future. Yeah, we've got another person who about a year ago wrote this new C++ framework, and at the time I said to him, yep, we'd prefer to stick with one common thread, but you know, people will do what they want to do.
Right.
And as yet he hasn't gotten around to submitting it, and he will have a high barrier to get over as far as I'm concerned. Significant things to prove that it significantly improves the abilities and stuff.
It will have to be really as good as current system config printer, which is going to be a good track for one version from scratch.
Exactly.
Something else that was talked about a little while ago was re-implementing some of the modules of System Config Printer as C or C++. I think in particular the PPDs module, which is to do with sorting out which PPDs should be used for a particular printer. That discussion didn't really go anywhere. I think one option was to wrap that in a dbus call, and I haven't actually done that yet. But
so if you take it into dbus modules, it would be already a great step is then simply any setup tool could call the modules. It's probably less work if you turn it into C++ to make a Sprinter setup tool or something like that. And we still will maintain the code and maintain the ease of modifying Python code. But we have the possibility that several printer setup tools on one system use all our nice algorithms. So perhaps you should debuffize once the part which makes the listing of devices and joins the network printers correctly, and then debuffize the algorithm to choose the PPD and so on, so that all important algorithms are separately available by debuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's a case of having the time to do it, but sort of juggling that and the color management patches and the Rahi patches and that kind of thing. It's just a case of having the time to play with it.
Tim, I think Mike Sweet might have mentioned this briefly, or I might have when we passed through quickly State of Cups and State of IPP yesterday, but there's a new property that IPP everywhere will make mandatory for conformance that's a UUID on the printer that can be queried, which will absolutely solve the sorting aliases of the same network printer and accidentally showing the same printer more than once.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, you know, system config printers are using some pretty hacky ways of working out that they're the same at the moment. So
those are the only available methods. They always have been.
So that in the future we check the UUID at first and fall back to the hacky part for older printers afterwards.
Yeah, which would mean that
if an entry does not have newer
printers into their systems, it would work better because the duplicates would be eliminated pretty certainly.
Yeah.
Yes, we must also take care that all back-end contributors, so not only CUPS itself, but also HPLib and so, are passing through the UUID.
And, Tim, I also wanted to say one of the other conformance requirements that will be a must and not a should of IPP everywhere is support for that recent PWG standard for standardized command values. A vendor can still put private ones in there, but if they name PostScript, they got to use the standard token as well. They can still say Rico-PostScript, whatever, and it'll still be there, but the point is to put standardized ones in as well so that the matching works.
That's great.
It means that in the device ID property, which will be required in the IPP printer in IPP everywhere, so not just in SNMP, but in IPP in-band, there will be a 1284 device ID, and that device ID will have the mandatory field command, but it'll also have mandatorily correct values for standard PDL. It can also have in the list a manufacturer's extended, you know, name for a variant of their PostScript library or whatever, but it'll have, I can't remember this frame, but it'll have the standard token for PostScript or the standard token for PDF.
Yes.
Yes, PS, right, from the printer bin. The tokens are taken verbatim from the IATA registry in the printer bin.
I remember you mentioning this last year, actually. I have been looking forward to this since the last meeting. So.
Yeah, so it will be all, but I think it's IPP everywhere gives us traction to say, go do these things. It's like the UUID being in the printer, you know, it can't claim everywhere conformance if you don't do it. Well, if you do it, everything gets a great deal simpler.
Yeah.
Because calculating printers, like using SNMP, they can also return
device ID.
Right.
And let's say Rico returns PostScript right now. But
right.
I actually have different PostScript implementation.
Right.
It's kind of the part of a controlling device. Let's say when you see taking input 3-3. HP and Rico might use different PostScript commands that take device. So you are saying they use auto-defined PostScript.
Remember, this is to say this is a supported PDL. Just PostScript. If you also want to say you have a particular variant of a PostScript library, you can put that as another vendor, Rico-PostScript or whatever token, or the word PostScript written out. The point is PS, present to conform, PDF for Adobe PDF, and so on. That is the standard tokens that are in the IANA registry from the printer for the common PDLs. Because that allows the find a driver for this make and model that supports this PDL to be solved.
That actually would make another problem easier, which is, well, if you know that a printer supports a particular command set, that's all very well, but how do you know which of the available drivers you have is sort of a generic driver for PostScript or PXL or, you know, whatever you have? So one way of doing that would be to have in the PPD for that driver, you know, what I said before on my slides, on the 1284 device ID with a command field in it.
Right, and not
with
just
one of these specific tokens.
Yeah, that was the other part of it, Tim. It was to be able to fall back to a driver known to work for PostScript as a generic driver. Yeah, that was probably a bad example. For PDF, as a generic driver, if you can't find an exact match, and that would make the fallback easier because the PPD file would list standard command set, standard PDL names, so that it would allow a graceful fallback, for instance, within a model family, as opposed to a driver for the particular model, which just was issued this month, and there is no such thing as a driver for it.
So, Ira, how is it intended that PPDs would declare that they support a particular command set? Was it a similar method to this 1284
device?
Yeah,
I'm assuming, well, I mean, I have to talk with Mike about this, but I'm assuming CUPS will just say use the same PWG standard, report them the same ways, by preference put the standard PDL names first, so that if you were doing simple matching, when someone didn't realize they should read them all, you would find the standard command set names first, and then if a vendor has, you know, a variant of the PDL, they can also still put that string in to match their own tools and their own tools that expect to find that particular spelling of Rico-PostScript with case or however it's spelled. But it would just, it would make sure that you could do, that you could tell that the PDL was, the basic PDL was supported by this driver, and I'm assuming that Mike would say that I'm quite sure that Mike would say that the CUP standard is that PPD has to use the same standard keywords.
So, I mean, I think with IPP everywhere, the idea is that you only have a handful of drivers in any case, isn't it? So I guess you'd know which your PXL driver was.
Right.
So if you saw PXL, then you'd know you could use that one. I think the problem we're at the moment is that you get all you can see is which the available drivers are, the whole bunch of them. So
right.
You can't necessarily know which one is a generic driver for a particular language.
Right, but a printer that supports IPP everywhere is going to go right on continuing to support, you know, what I'll call legacy infrastructure,
yeah.
And is going to go on supporting probably at least model family drivers from the vendor as well. But those drivers, if they were CUPS 1.5 conformant, which requires IPP everywhere conformance, would correctly report in IPP, in SNMP, and in their PPD file that matches the vendor driver, or the vendor class driver, would correctly report the PDLs, as well as the make and model. And then the fuzzy matching will still be there because of manufacturers changing the way they spell their name from one model series to another, or HP versus Hewlett-Packard, as you mentioned. You know, the writing out the manufacturer name versus the acronym, which is much more commonly used, but not always, and seems to have no consistency looking at printers that I've seen.
Yeah, well, so one thing that I touched on right at the end was having a good list of device IDs, and HP in particular. It's great that in their HP Cups driver, they've got device IDs listed for all of the printers. Unfortunately, they mostly seem to be guesses and wrong, particularly with this sort of HP or Hewlett-Packard business. So I think they're there for the benefit of the HP LIP setup program, and not necessarily being an accurate reflection of the device ID in the printer, which is a shame, really.
Because it's who wrote the PPD and who wrote the printer stuff, right? The person who wrote the PPD probably did have to guess. Well,
this is actually it's not PPDs; it's the DRV file, so it's a CUPS DDK. Input file. But yes, you know, I guess they didn't have access to all the devices or whatever reason.
What Tim was saying was that the HP Cups list of device IDs looked like it, in many cases it was guesses and has errors or is inaccurate to the actual device IDs of some HP printers.
But Tim, can I send you an email? I'll send you wherever you have seen this issue.
Tim,
did you hear that?
I didn't, no.
Oh, send an email to the HP folks at HP LIP, the HP India folks, with this question.
Okay, I've been collecting, you know, corrections, so I'll send them those and see what it's
that like. Would be great. Yeah, right. Here's some of the specific problems would be a lot better than there are things wrong.
Yeah.
Okay, it's 10 o'clock.
And the LSB group is supposed to come to us because, as Jeff List said, there's probably more of you, probably more printing people than there are LSB people. So as soon as they figure out that we aren't upstairs in Kyoto.
Yes, I will go now. To the room.
Ah, good idea. Okay, thank you, Tim. We'll
thank you.
In a few minutes we'll shift to the LSB joint session.
Okay.
So, Tim, the real impetus behind this new GNOME 3 printer install dialogue was to make it more user-friendly?
I think so. I think also to make it more integrated with other types of system setting.
Okay.
Not shown in the slides was basically you start up the system settings application and it shows you sort of your personal settings like your screen resolution and your, you know, keyboard settings and all this kind of thing. And in amongst that is printers.
Okay,
and when you click on each one of these things, the window changes to that, to those settings.
I mean, it's there, yes. I'm here at least.
Jeff's here.
I'm here, so
we're under control.
Yes, he has the whole LSB work group.
That's right. You have stuff you want to project.
I actually,
Andrew has a virtual room up and is sending it to the net as well.
I actually do not have a presentation because I'm just going to talk.
Okay,
if that's okay
that's
with
fine.
You guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because there's not, I don't know that there's, it's not super complicated what I have to do.
All right.
So we got.
Do you need power for your laptop or just?
Nope. Just a
all right.
Session. I'm trying not to
brief break while we wait for the...
Yeah,
we might check out other sessions or stuff. So if we wait a few minutes, nobody comes. Yeah, I saw they were chatting.
Actually, I think I'm going to get a drink. So I think I know what happened to the good phone. We had the Polycom on at our Tuesday meeting, and it worked really well. We have a conference room now that's almost unusable. It's like the audio is like garbled. You can't understand when people talk. I'm not sure they can understand us real well when we talk. So, but oh well.
Yes, on the Open Printing Summit, it always worked for us. We had always a good phone. The only time when we had a printing meeting where it did not work was at Google, where some stuff was built into the room, and this really did not work.
Give it to Google to do it fancy and
yes.
Only somewhat working.
Richard has received an email about the color management session.
Is Richard here?
No, Richard Hughes.
Hughes, yeah, that's what that
Yes, he's not here. He has announced before the printing summit that he wants to participate by calling in. But up to now, he did not call in. Probably he participates only in the color management session and not in all sessions.
That would make sense.
Which is this afternoon.
Yes.
Richard won't be able to call in today. Actually, Till, I think he said that he tried to get a slot to present and he couldn't get one or something. I don't know if that was a miscommunication or what happened.
Slot what?
I don't know if it was a miscommunication. But Richard Hughes had told me that he tried to get a presentation slot but couldn't get one or something.
No.
Yeah, that was miscommunication.
Okay. In any case, he's double booked tonight, so he won't be able to call in this afternoon for you.
Okay, so Tim, are you going to talk then this afternoon?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Go over again and tell them
there's a good
last
idea.
Call for the Open Printing Summit.
There's a good idea. Oh, there they go.
all okay, we can start.
The people who stayed in the room, they are not interested in coming. They have other discussions.
Okay. Are we good?
Yes.
So, for those of you who don't know me, my name is Jeff LaQuia. I am the project lead for the Linux Standard Base, the LSB. Just to sort of very quickly recap for people who don't know what that is. The LSB is an effort to describe the Linux platform as a platform, as opposed to, you know, anywhere from, depending on how, you know, what distributions you look at, anywhere from three major to several hundred to several thousand little platforms all over the place. We define a specification for applications to program against that basically describes how Linux API. We publish tools that allow you to build applications, as well as testing tools that allow you to test both distributions and applications to find compatibility problems. And then fix those. Thanks to our efforts, most of the major Linux distributions are LSB certified, actually, which means that they have gone through an audit that we take part in. And this means that there is an API set that can be targeted if you are writing an application that will run on pretty much all of the major distros without having to rebuild and retarget for each individual distro. So, part of, as I understand it, part of the interest that Open Printing has for the LSB is that printer drivers themselves are applications, and that printer drivers and printer subsystems have to hook into various features of the operating system, and it would be nice if that could be done in a distribution-independent fashion. And so the thought is, well, hey, there's this LSB thing, maybe they can help. Hopefully we can help, and hopefully we have. So I don't have a presentation today because the news that I have to bring is not very complicated, and I think what we want to spend the bulk of our time, or what I would like to see, is some kind of idea of where we need to go next. So the LSB has, you know, this is what the LSB has done. What more does the LSB need to do, and how can we work together to achieve those goals? The big news is that early March, we released LSB version 4.1. This is an update to LSB 4.0. Some of you have experience working with 4.1 and or 4.0 and you've been working with this. So there were a number of things that were requested that where you guys came to us and said, look, these are the things that we're really kind of hurting for in LSB 4.0, and can we add these things? The two things that I think were the biggest issues, well, there are actually three. Number one is the CUP 1.2 API. So we had supported the 1.1 API largely because of some of the enterprise distributions that only had CUP 1.1. This meant, for example, the HTTP and IPP functions were missing, and this was evidently a royal pain to you guys. So that was one of the requests that was made. The second request is that GPK 2.10 had a very nice new printing API, print dialog, and all kinds of stuff, and wouldn't it be nice if people could use this? And hey, Stu.
Hi.
Hi.
That's Stu Benedict. He's also a member of the LSB. He wasn't able to make it here. And I'm sure he'll have plenty of corrections if I get anything wrong, which I often do. So anyway, for those two features, CUP 1.2 API with HTTP IPP functions and GPK 2.10, which includes the printing API, those are delivered. LSB 4.1 includes both of those. Right now. And I was talking to Till about this earlier, and he's like, oh good, now I can update the EDK instructions.
The other thing, there was a third option, or a third item that was on the list that was requested, and that was FAME. So a lot of you have multifunction devices, and you'd like to be able to have one driver that does both scanning and printing stuff. The problem is that FAME is not part of the LSD, and so whenever you do that, you kind of break out of the LSD model. Our answer last year was that we probably were going to need help with that, that this is not something we could do, that we're going to be able to do really easily on our own. And as a result, that did not happen. The help did not come, and we ended up dropping as goal for LSD 4.1. That does not mean that STAIN is off the table. I think pretty much the same thing applies. For our next version of the LSD, we are thinking that we will have more. We're probably going to wait a little while longer before the next specification release. So we may have time to put more effort into STAIN this round than we did for the last. But it would still be appreciated if we had some resources we could call upon. I believe we actually looked at the question of whether we could do STAIN on our own. It doesn't look like someone can help us from the printing side, so is this something we can do on our own? We did a little bit of investigation and immediately got into the weeds. There are some issues, as I understand it, with the, because the interesting part of the STAIN API for a printer driver vendor is the driver interface. So the application side interface, that's interesting, but not quite so much from your guys' perspective. And there were a number of issues where we were not sure that binary compatibility was able to be maintained for scanner drivers. Now, that could entirely be misunderstanding on our part, but like I said, this is a place where we can use some assistance. Even if it was just somebody who's like, yeah, I know Zane, I can tell you anything you need to know. We can go, okay, so when you call FUBAR and you do this and that and the other thing, it doesn't look to me like it works right. Why not? Oh, you did this wrong. It's actually supposed to work this way. Oh, great, thanks. That kind of thing. The other two options that are up here, D-Bus. So I can tell you that D-Bus is on our list. It is
not just for printing.
Not just for printing. D-Bus is humongous. Probably one of the, we have a number of initiatives. Accessibility has moved to D-Bus. You guys are using D-Bus. Other people are using D-Bus. Applications want to use D-Bus. The best way for handling crossing the security barrier to access system services is Policy Kit, which is D-Bus. I could go on. I don't think we need to justify that. D-Bus is probably the big ticket item on our list for the next version of the LSP, probably the biggest, most important thing. So I would say the likelihood D-Bus will make it into the LSP next go-round is very high.
Oh, good.
For a number of reasons, accessibility by itself is huge.
Jeff, is the next version expected to be called 4.2 or 5.x?
We are not sure. That's one of the things later on this afternoon we have to talk, we're going to talk about that question. And one of the questions that's come up is that there are some things in the LSD that have been deprecated or starting to make noise about wanting to get rid of them. The biggest thing is Q3. Q3's been in there for a while. For binary compatibility purposes, you want to keep that stuff around for a while longer, but a lot of people are now starting to argue, hey, it's time to get rid of Q3. It's old enough. Everyone has had a chance to port it. People who want to use Q3 apps are pretty much now, it's starting to get to the point where a lot of the other stuff that apps use is so crufty that you kind of have to use an old distro in order to use it. So it's getting to the point where it's maybe time to drop it. Well, deprecating is the kind of thing that happens in a major version.
That's what I was going to say. So that would mean a major version.
So that would mean that the next version of the LSP would be 5.0. So those are the kinds of things that we're talking about. We're also talking about one of the things that we're looking at is
there's a lot of pressure on us to, number one, support the old enterprise distros and slowly update over a course of years, as well as the cutting edge, the Ubuntu's of the world, the people that are releasing every 6 months the latest and greatest, and I want to write you that stuff now, darn it. And if you do, you the LC behind because we're back here with the pluses and rels and sensoffs of this world. So that's one of the things, that's one of the other things we're talking about and possibly be doing for LC 5.0, introducing a framework where we can actually support that model without having to, you know, support both the old enterprise and the newest, latest and greatest.
And a faster revolutionary model.
Exactly.
Well, that'd be welcome everywhere, I'm sure.
So, I see UDEV is on the list. So my question would be, and, you know, I think this might be a good time to, you know, get into discussion and so on. What would the use case be for UDEV? What kinds of problems do we run into where some parts of UDEV need to be in the LSP? The reason I ask is that this gets into kernel stuff, and the kernel folks tend to be very, very, very suspicious of any attempt to take a piece of the kernel and lock it down to something like the LSP. But it, you know, UDEV has to work this way. Well, what happens if we need to change it? So, Mike, I guess what might be useful would be a discussion as to what kinds of things we need to do in UDEV. And like what kind of, what are your needs there? And maybe there's a way to interact with the kernel community and say, hey, you know, people need to be able to do this. How do we do this? Is there a way to do this either by UDEV or can you set something up that you don't mind sticking to?
I mean, you're committing to a good long period.
Exactly. So, anyway, that's basically what I came here to tell you. I think the good news is between CUPS 1.2 and GTK 2.10, I think that I'm hoping anyway that we've gotten rid of a lot of headaches for you guys. Saying it was unfortunate that it had to be, didn't make it this time, but we are still interested in doing it. Dbus is definitely, I would say very likely, if not a certainty. And then with the UDEV question, I think we can see what we can do there.
There's cases.
Yep. So with that, I'll open it up to questions, comments. Does anyone want to talk about any of these things? Is there anyone here who's a SANE expert who can, you know, who wants to step up as a resource, even if it's just someone we can send emails to and say, hey, what the heck?
In the same group.
Yeah.
No, none of us are.
Yeah.
So I can do some scratching.
Yeah.
We can put a call out on printing architecture and printing comments, asking for people who actually have some understanding of SANE and are working with it for manufacturers.
Like I said, I think that the situation this go around is that we're going to have a bit more flexibility to work on things that, you know, like before we said, look, we can't do things if we don't have help. Now I think that the story is more, we will try to do it, and if we have help, it'll make it a lot easier. But we may be able to get something done. We'll see.
Advice and technical support may turn the corner.
And the key thing here is making sure that we understand, because a lot of the issues that we had when we did our quick look to see if we could do this had to do with the way that the drivers and the library interact. Mm-hmm. So, you know, of course, there's a CL opening thing that happens, and, you know, the symbols mesh. And part of the problem is, okay, this is a set of ABIs, and this is how those ABIs work, and are they stable, and, you know, how does all that happen? And then the second side is, what do we tell a printer driver? You know, okay, so you get BL open by SANE. What does, you know, if SANE calls in to you? Well, you better be ready to to handle that call, or at least to degrade gracefully, which is our standard thing. Either you do, either everything works right, or it degrades gracefully if the feature's not supported. You do the right thing and put up a dialog box that's crashing or causing your computer reboot or something.
What? I don't want crashing and reboot.
It's the traditional approach. There you go.
We are not using Windows yet.
Oh, low blow.
Low blow. Not very accurate either. I reboot this machine every 2 or 3 months. It never crashed.
That's Windows?
Yeah, that's 7. It's 7 Pro, but 7 Home. Just a staple.
So I think...
Well, that's what I meant. The same kernel. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they just...
It's just skin, you know, on top of that. It's whatever. Features. Yeah, services on top of that.
So
but I find it more stable than well-tuned XP was. XP was pretty solid.
So, I think with Sane, it's just a matter of we'll probably need to sort of keep that conversation going. For Dbus, like I said, this is like a shoe-in. This is like a no-brainer. But it would be nice for us, you know, as we're looking at Dbus, what kinds of things do you guys need this for?
Okay. Well, we just had a new application this morning before we came in.
Principally, there comes a signal from Dbus when a new printer is plugged. And a manufacturer could, for example, have some extra feature for the printer, like load firmware into the printer, or install some extra module which has not to do with the print queue. And so it would be nice if the manufacturer could deliver some program which is triggered by Dbus.
To be able to listen to Dbus.
I can speak a little bit about how System Config Printer uses UDEV, if that helps.
Yes.
Okay, so basically, with UDEV, there are some hooks for when devices are added to run some programs that are part of System Config Printer. And what these do are basically find out the device ID of the thing that's just been plugged in, then look through the available drivers and available printers. I'm trying to think. It's the available devices from CUPS and try and match them up to that particular device, and then look through the available printers from CUPS to see if it's already been configured. And if it hasn't been configured, then it tries to configure it. If it has been configured, but it's been previously disabled because it's been unplugged, then it re-enables it. In addition, it sends a Dbus message, a system-wide Dbus message when it's configured a printer. And I think this is the Dbus message that Till might have been referring to. So it's actually not Dbus, but UDEV.
Perhaps I have said Dbus and wanted to say the UDEV.
Right, yeah. And actually, HP Lip ships some UDEV hooks for exactly what was mentioned just now, loading firmware into printers. And there's an unresolved issue, actually, because this conflicts with System Config Printer's use of the printer at the same time. And that's not yet been resolved, unfortunately. So I'm not quite sure at the moment what the resolution of that is, because the thing is you've got several things all trying to use the device at once. You've got the firmware uploader, you've got the UDEV hook that's part of System Config Printer, and then also that hook is asking CUPS what devices are available, so that's trying to talk to the device as well.
All of which isn't working because the firmware isn't there yet.
Right.
Yeah,
so there's
exactly.
contention issues and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, just so I'm understanding, is there a Dbus message that is sent to announce this stuff, or is it entirely done via UDEV?
There's a Dbus message that's only it's sent by System Config Printer after it's configured the printer. And the reason for the message is so that the user can see a little pop-up on the screen saying the printer you just plugged in is now ready to use.
I see. But it's more of a notification, it's more like a notification area type of thing, not necessarily
after the fact, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But all of the interesting work for configuring the printer and stuff on plug-in is done via UDEV.
Yeah.
Now, the answer of, I'm gonna try and channel a kernel developer, which might be a dangerous thing for me to do. But the question that I would ask, so a lot of people might say, well, if you're interacting with UDEV, that should be the distribution failawake exclusively. So anyone who's working with UDEV needs to do it through the distro, and therefore, device driver manufacturers need to hook into something. I'm kind of looking at this from the perspective UDEV has made some radical changes in the past to fit with what the kernel is doing, and I'm trying to gauge, is there a way to accomplish what we're wanting to do that either A, doesn't require us to add UDEV to the LSB, or B, just this little piece is all we need.
Yeah, and I mean, I know that the UDEV configuration file syntax has changed several times, just over the time I've been using it myself for system config printer. So, I can recognize that it's a hard problem to try and bring this into a standard. And I don't know whether having some sort of wrapper to have it as a DBus, converting it into DBus messages, DBus signals and things like that would help at all. I guess it's something to talk to the UDEV developers about.
Yeah. So maybe that's the approach we should take is the UDEV question should probably be brought up with the UDEV developers and see what they say about standardizing parts of this. Because again, it's beyond just the fact that it's an LSB issue, if the UDEV folks decide to change their configuration script their configuration system again, there are going to be a lot of printer drivers that suddenly break. And
oh, yeah.
A, the printer driver people are not going to be happy to get all those tech support calls, and B, the UDEV people are not going to be happy to get yelled at because they broke everybody's printer. So there's definitely something that needs to happen. And maybe the right answer here is something like a DBus front end that ends up talking to UDEV and can be made distribution and kernel specific.
Yeah.
I think another wrinkle is that when you're at the UDEV level, then you get exposure to things like where you can talk to the raw USB device, or you can try and use the USB LP kernel module. But these things conflict. Even just the system config printer use of it ends up having to, first of all, hook into USB LP devices being added, and second of all, hook it into USB raw devices being added, and for each type, try and get the device ID using a different method for each type. And this is because there's a third option, which is HP's CUPS backend, which uses libUSB, which is using the USB raw devices,
right,
unloads the USB LP driver so that you can't rely on that driver alone when you're looking at printers being added or removed. You have to know about both. So it's quite a tricky thing at that level.
So it sounds like one of the things that needs to happen is that printer manufacturers and distros need to get together and say, okay, this is who's going to be responsible for this piece of the configuration, and make sure that everyone is on the same page so that you don't have this kind of thing. And I know this is what you guys are working on, but I'm just making sure I understand this right.
It would be great if there was a stable maybe DBus interface saying a printer has been added and this is this is its address in whatever form. I don't know if UDEV is at the moment sort of stable enough to bring it into the standard for that. But I mean, it may be that it is. I'm just not sure.
Yeah. And then, of course, you've got the problem that the moment that you start talking about interfacing via hardware through D-Bus, you know, people will inevitably bring up HAL and the fact that HAL is kind of going away now.
It is already completely out of Ubuntu main, and perhaps in this new edition, even out of universe, completely eliminated.
So the answer that people will, I think the answer that people say is, well, if you need to do stuff with hardware and hardware events, you just need to do UDEV. But then that brings up, you know, it's kind of like a we're kind of going around in circles. UDEV doesn't want to be standardized, but it's the only way to talk to printers, and we don't want to talk to printers through D-Bus because that means we're bringing HAL back, and we don't like HAL, so you should just do UDEV, except that we're not going to tell you how to do UDEV in a consistent fashion because we want to change our mind. And so this may just need to be resolved, you know, one of these things, you know, grab Phil and some UDEV people and maybe LSB people, lock them up in a room and don't let them out until they figure it out.
Or which part of you? It sounds like some part of UDEV has got to get stable and stay stable and have some many years guaranteed backward compatibility, because we can't tell everybody, oh, upgrade to the newest version of your distro, or, oh, by the way, you no longer can install your printer that worked last week.
Right. And maybe the answer here, I mean, one of the things that people have done in the past is that they side, you know, UDEV creates a new API that kind of sideloads over here that has decreased functionality, but it's the kind of thing where they feel comfortable supporting it, translating it into whatever magic UDEV is doing at the moment, and then standardizing that, and without going all the way to D-Bus, which some people seem to think is a bad idea, or at least they seem to think it was a bad idea back in HAL days.
Yeah.
All right. So, I think we've covered UDEV, unless someone has more information about what's going on with UDEV and the things that need to happen. Were there other things that people were wanting to do with printers and D-Bus? So there was mention of the D-Bus message that, you know, your printer is now ready. Do you guys feel good about other types of notifications to the user, that type of thing that would go through D-Bus?
One thing of where D-Bus is used also in printing is for a fax queue with HPLIP, that when someone sends a job into the fax queue, the back end sends a D-Bus signal to open a dialog so that you can choose the cover page and the fax number for your fax job.
And the trouble with this mechanism is that it means that unless your fax machine is plugged into the printer you're actually sat in front of the screen on, then you don't get to see that message.
Right.
Yes. This kind of fax queue unfortunately works only if the fax queue is locally defined.
So another use of D-Bus.
You cannot postpart this queue to other clients with CUPS.
I don't know if it's widely known, but CUPS has a D-Bus notifier. So CUPS has this notion of having a notifier program which will convert IPP events into whatever, you know, whatever it needs, emails or whatever. And there is one that converts IPP events to system D-Bus signals. That's actually how GNOME 3 does its job and printer notifications. It hooks into the D-Bus notifier.
Do any of these services that we're talking about use anything more than just basic D-Bus? Like, are any of them hooked into things? From a standards perspective, I'm wondering, is D-Bus sufficient, or do we need stuff on top of D-Bus, things like Policy Kit or whatever? That's open to anyone to answer that question.
I guess it depends on, I mean, I suppose a lot of these things, you know, started out at freedesktop.org. So then I guess it depends how much of free desktop you want to pull in.
Yeah.
Well, we're not averse to putting in, you know, whatever we need to put in. You know, as long as whoever, you know, whatever we're putting in is willing to commit to a stable API, which we know the Dbus people already have at the low level. So, you know, if policy kit is needed and the policy kit people feel good about their current API, we can do that too. It's just a matter of sort of identifying what the workload is. So, you know, if we come to you guys in a year or two and say, hey, LSP 5.0 with Dbus support, you're like, oh, except that you don't have policy kit, so it doesn't help them. You know, that kind of thing.
Is perhaps for what is really needed in on top of Dbus, perhaps the best is to ask the HP. What HP lib needs.
Is there an HP lib guy here? Or?
Unfortunately, he left. He came down with some sort of stomach flu overnight.
Oh no. Ouch.
He was here briefly.
Oh, that sucks.
But we can ask. And Andrew can follow up the question.
Yeah. So yeah, I think the story with Dbus is, again, it's similar to SANE, it's just that, you know, it's a lot higher priority for us, so.
Because it's being used wider and wider.
Oh yeah, everyone's using it, and really it solves so many problems that, you know, it's a no-brainer.
And in the last couple of days, we probably half a dozen times mentioned, okay, wrap that library API in Dbus, and then, you know, and then we can solve some licensing problems, or
whaming language.
Yeah, or
different,
yeah.
Different users are the owners of the processor.
Right.
Yep. So if I were to hazard a guess, like if I were to predict today what we're going to do for the next version of the LSP, I would say Dbus is very, very likely. SANE, I think, is less likely, but I think I can guarantee that we will put some effort into SANE. Whether that will result in a SANE API in the next version of the LSP is kind of not clear, but we will definitely put some effort into SANE and see if we can get that to happen. For UDEV, it sounds like there's some conversations that need to happen where because the fundamental problem there is that we need to have some long-lived interfaces in something, either UDEV or some layer above it, that printer manufacturers can hook into to respond to hardware events. And if UDEV is, quote-unquote, the way to do that, then the UDEV folks are going to have to accept the fact that they're going to have restrictions on their flexibility placed on them. And, you know, if that doesn't work, then we might have to go up a layer to say Dbus. And if that means we resurrect the ghost of HAL and send it shambling across the landscape, then, you know, so be it. So I think that basically covers, I guess, what we, you know, some of the work we need to get done. It sounds like the biggest unresolved issue here is going to be figuring out the UDEV situation and then perhaps going on to, get our ducks in a row with SANE. So I think from our perspective, it sounds like the Dbus works. As long as we do what we want to do with Dbus, you guys will be happy. If that changes, of course, let us know. Any other questions or comments? Does anyone want to talk about, for example, problems that they have using the LSP tools? I know it's part of the DDK, and so you guys are using our stuff, and we want to make sure you guys are happy using our stuff. Any other comments or issues or anything like that? If not, then I think we're done. Otherwise.
I wish Mike Sweet were here today, but I think...
I am on the phone.
Mike, you're here.
Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
So, Mike, LSP 4.1 does have
is going to have, no, does have.
Has right now.
TUPS 1.2, the full APIs, the HTTP and the IPP APIs. Do we, is there any advantage to incrementally advancing to, for instance, CUPS 1.3 versus leaving it at 1.2 till a major release and going forward to 1.4 or even 1.5, depending on the time frame?
There are some interesting APIs in 1.3 that are useful for applications that need to talk at that level. And let me just see. I'll tell you which ones they are. Just a few things for IPP. Okay, so there's the admin APIs for controlling the server, though I don't know if we'd want those in LSB. There are the off-string APIs for the HTTP stuff to set and get the off-string, which you sometimes need for applications. There's a CUPS raster error string function to get a localized error string for the raster functions. And I thought, but just little things. 1.2 has most of the stuff already. 1.4 has some more things that it might be interesting, but you know, it's really your call. How far advanced do you want to get? Based on our discussions yesterday, we may end up with some APIs that get deprecated or removed when we go to the next major release of CUPS, but you know, that's years down the road as far as LSB is concerned.
Right. Well, I was guessing that even CUPS 1.4 is probably years down the road for LSB, but it goes to what Jeff was talking about earlier at the start, which is the LSB working group thinking about how to accommodate the fast movers like Ubuntu and still accommodate this, the slow-moving enterprise high-end releases.
Yeah. So it's entirely possible that, and you know, not to, this is really speculative, so I don't want to, like, create expectations for people and then, like, 2 years from now, oh, it didn't happen, why didn't you do that? I thought you were doing that. But the thing that we're looking at is the ability to be able to move, to give users the ability to choose what they want to target. So, for example, having the ability to, you know, the LSB, as a conservative, this will support everything type of model, but then have, in addition to that, the ability to say, okay, I want to move beyond the LSB, and I want to do these extra things. So as a possibility, and this would end up being a call that a printer driver would need to make, if an app or a printer driver vendor were to really, really, really need something that was in a newer version of CUP, they might end up making the choice, okay, I realize that I'm going to drop support for, say, RHEL 5 and SLES 10 by including this new API, but I'm okay with that. I can live with that. And then the challenge for us is to actually enable those kinds of decisions that the app vendor or the printer driver vendor can make. With the LSB as sort of a fallback, so that still is the everything works, the backward compatibility, all the stuff that's there with the LSB, but then letting people move beyond that. So it's entirely possible that the next version of the LSB will include even CUPS 1.5 as a, not as a, you know, this is the LSB, we guarantee it's everywhere, but as an option. So hey, you know, if you need to move forward, you can. Just rec means you're not going to run on all this other stuff over here.
As a modular option.
Exactly. So now, in terms of the LSB, you know, that guaranteed thing, our major constraint is the current versions of the major enterprise distros. So right now, that would be the RHEL 6s and Splice 11s and Ubuntu Lucids of the world. And so, you know, from that perspective, we're going to move at the pace that those guys dictate. And it's entirely possible, I haven't checked, it's entirely possible that with RHEL 6 and Splice 11 and Ubuntu Lucid, everyone's up to CUPS 1.3 at least. And if that's the case, well, we can move that. That shouldn't be a problem to move up to. You know, pull in the interfaces that make sense. But
the 1.2 is the big lead because so much infrastructure depended on not just the high-level convenience API, but the real IDP API in particular that had the details and the rest, all of the other options that weren't available for the convenience API.
Now, the one issue that is left to resolve as far as getting that into people's hands, the 4.1 SDK is out. It supports the new APIs, all that good stuff. From a certification standpoint, we're only a month out from the release of LSB 4.1. So far, all of the distributions are certified to 4.0, which has the 1.1 API.
Right.
Now, we will be working with the distros to move that up. And in point of fact, our testing has shown that everyone who is certified to LSB 4.0 is compliant with LSB 4.1. So there won't be a problem in terms of having to push someone to upgrade to the newer CUP. The main thing is that there are some changes that need to be made to every distro so that they advertise LSB 4.1 support. And that's basically all that needs to happen.
Okay.
That'll be happening over the next little while. We'll be moving to roll out LSB 4.1 support to all the current major distros. From your perspective, you know, if you're LSB certifying, that may or may not, you know, if you're interested in that, in the formal certification stuff, that may matter to you. But from a practical perspective, if you're wanting to use the DDK and build against LSB 4.1, it is our understanding that your stuff should run pretty much everywhere.
It's probably already safe.
It's probably already safe. You won't get the guarantees of LSB that, you know, we can't really get there yet, but that's more a matter of administrivia than it is
actually
practical.
Is that a matter of months, do you think?
A lot depends on the individual distro. For example, I would expect, just based on past experience, that for Ubuntu, we may get Oneric, whatever the next one is.
Yes, Oneric is the next
one. Oneric. We may get Oneric advertising LSB 4.1 support, and then Oneric plus one, I understand, is the LTS, and we get that LSB certified.
Mm-hmm.
So that would, you know, for Ubuntu, it may happen fairly rapidly. So, you know, Natty would still be advertising LSB 4.0. But Oneric might be able to move that faster. Flip that over. RHEL 5 just certified to LSB 4.0, and it's been 2 years. So.
Right. Okay. So it will be probably a spectrum of time.
There will be a spectrum of time. Yes. So. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Or feedback, or
do you have any guess at all about the time frame in which LSB working group will begin to speculate on whether it's going to be called LSB 5.0 or LSB 4.2?
That is actually topic of discussion for this afternoon
okay.
in our work group. So I'm not sure the decision will be made at that time.
I wasn't expecting that.
But for a number of reasons, like if I had to guess right now, I would guess that the next version of the LSB will be called 5.0.
Because of this needing to deprecate some old dead wood stuff.
Between the fact that we need to deprecate and the fact that we're actively attempting to address this problem of moving faster, I think that the changes that will need to be made in order to allow people to move up to the newer, more cutting-edge distros is going to require some changes that really, like, break the that would indicate, again,
5.0.
a 5.0 release to make sure everyone understands that, you know, at this may be the first point, in fact, since LSP 3.0, that we actually break binary compatibility, which for us is a major big deal. We don't want to do this lightly.
Yeah. But in any case, you're not turning LSP releases on a scale of months anyway.
No.
Right. So, I mean, this isn't going to happen, like, without a good deal of forewarning.
Absolutely. There will be plenty of forewarning. And, in fact, I think we're going to do better this cycle around. One of the things that was discussed is the fact that we did not coordinate very well. We developed LSP 4.1 largely on our own schedule, which is fine. But the fact that it affects so many other people means that we need to be better about coordinating our efforts. So perhaps it would have made more sense for us to have coordinated more closely with the RHEL 6 release, just as an example of one thing that we could have done better.
Right.
So in the future, we're going to do more of that coordinating, and that would include, you know, getting with you guys and saying, hey, LSP 5.0 is getting ready to enter beta. Anything you need? Or, you know, hopefully before that, we're saying, hey, we're at, you know, this point at LSP 5.0. If you want a feature, speak up. That kind of thing.
Well, apart from the same for multifunction devices scanning and specific, you know, the D-bus is a gotta have it. and it keeps sounding like, without going back to Son of Hal, some corner of UDEV being, some part of UDEV being, and I'm not the person to determine, who, you know, which part, but, you know, some part of UDEV, you know, being guaranteed stable and guaranteed stable for a long time to come is kind of pretty important, because it's inherent, whether it's on the network or whether it's a local plug. If you plug a printer in, there's a hardware communication there, and you're right, everyone goes, no, don't just, you know, don't do proprietary stuff and then glue it with D-bus, because that's not a good solution.
Well,
it tends to break.
Part of the problem, too, I think, is as much conceptual as it is. It's as much conceptual as it is technical. So the kernel faults are used to being the absolute masters of hardware. So 90% of device drivers out there are kernel modules that get loaded at, you know, and they're considered part of the kernel. And, you know, Greg KH and his big push, everyone should be developing in tree and all that stuff. So from a conceptual perspective, everyone's used to the idea that a hardware device is a kernel module which has intimate ties into the kernel, and so you've got, you know, they have to be able to keep up with the churn and all that stuff. Part of what's unique about printers is that so much of what printing does is user space.
Right.
Very, very little of it. I don't think there's really anything particularly strange that happens at the kernel level, because it's all basically, you know, how do you send bits down the little wire going into the printer, and whether that's through, you know, USB or FireWire or parallel or whatever, that's like uninteresting.
Yeah, right.
The interesting stuff happens in user space.
Yeah.
So you have this unique situation where you have a user space device driver which needs a stable API. Kernel people are perfectly willing to talk about stable APIs when they're talking about applications, but, you know, this notion of a user space device driver is, I think, a little alien to their way of thinking. So there may be some convincing that needs to happen.
Yeah. Well, explaining to them that they don't want 28 million permanently loaded device drivers in the kernel may catch their attention.
Ghost script, the kernel module.
Yeah.
All the ghost script people go, ah! And all the kernel people go, ah! So.
And the users go make coffee.
And I did not want to get a kernel developer.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. That's its own world. It's a very nice world. That's your cup of tea, but
if that's what you want to do.
It has interesting. All right. Well, anything else? I want to give people the the opportunity to let us know what they're thinking if they want to.
Yes. For number 4C, he had some permission issues with regards to the UDEV is also needed for pain to have correct permissions on the devices for scan interface.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of COPS. So vendors usually add UDEV rules, set of permissions correctly, so that user space can access, for example, the same front end can access the device.
Mm-hmm.
So we should do that part for the plumbing, and we use UDEV for that.
I'm curious, different distributions have different schemes for handling user permissions. How do you have a framework for reconciling that, or has a standard evolved that we don't know about for handling permissions?
Usually the scan interface doesn't have a default set of permissions, say for scanner group or something, so the front end doesn't detect the device because it has a root permission. So you have to set it properly. Some distributions it works, but in some it doesn't.
So it's still kind of in flux.
Yes.
Like there's no standard way of saying, I want to give my users access permission on this device in a way that'll work across the board.
Yes. If it's a scanner interface, you should have a scanner group or something, and applications have access to the scanner group privileges. So all applications or scanning applications have access to these devices without vendors having to force the plumbing.
Yeah. That might be an issue where that might even go beyond the question of, you know, getting a stable UDEV interface, because even if you have a stable UDEV interface, you have to have a stable interface for adding permissions. Every distro has a scanner group that they do their magic on when you log in that makes it work. So there may be a conversation that needs to happen there, and I don't know if the same people have a standard way of doing it or if there's something better. Because that issue, handling user login is actually something that's kind of in flux right now. So a lot of people are doing a lot of different things to, so when you log in, you have access to sound, you have access to, the OpenGL stuff and this and that, and other devices. When you plug in a USB stick, that works and all that stuff. There are frameworks that exist for handling all of that. I'm sure scanners can fit into it. It's just a matter of figuring out how. So. Any other questions, comments, issues? Rick? I'll duck. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Thank you very much. COPS 1.2 is a real good piece of news. As you know, we've been asking.
Oh, you've been asking.
Yeah, especially that the scope of interfaces is widened, because the COPS, many of these interfaces were already in COPS 1.1.
The 1.2 interface is actually becoming progressively more important in the future for the correct installation of a network printer, because the in-band IPT may well be, if the thing's not a USB printer, you're going to have to talk to it via IPT or SNMP. And talking via SNMP is unreliable and liable to be broken by enterprise policies that said SNMP doesn't top off its subnet, so it doesn't matter that it's routable, it never got there, the bridge dropped it.
Yeah, so SNMP is its own
ball of wax.
All right, well, that was good timing. I am
back over. Thank you.
Perfect. So, thanks, everyone.
Thanks,
we'll
thanks, Jeff.
See you around.
Testing.
to these bugs?
Yes. Hello, my name is George Liu. I'm from Recall, and I'm leading the Linux Server Development Effort in Recall. And this is Jeremy. He is our lead type engineer on testing drivers on Linux platform. Today, I'm going to talk about the testing for on the Linux printing. So during the presentation, if you get any questions, please stop us from me and shoot us questions either to me or Jack. Here's the agenda. So first, I'm going to talk about how Recall, how do we test our Linux drivers? And what kind of problem do we find during our driver testing? And then I talk about we do suspect there's maybe some holes and gaps in the Linux printing system that's not well tested. And I want to learn how Linux distributions and applications they do test. So hopefully we can find a better collaboration on how can we do better. So how can the more coverage, better testing on Linux driver and provide user a smoother printing experience on Linux. So first, how we could test our drivers. Our testing, the two areas are focusing on. The first area is we want to test our drivers against new Linux distributions. So what we do here is we have fixed release testing cycle. Basically, that's matched to our product release cycle. Every 3 months or every 4 months, that we have fixed schedule here. And our release schedule is not necessarily in sync with Linux distributions release cycle, because Linux distributions, there are so many distributions they want to popular use, like Red Hat, SUSE, Ubuntu, every distribution. They don't say that everybody release on January 1st or July 1st. Everybody has their own release cycle. It's very difficult for Recall to keep in sync with them. So we do our own release cycle that in sync of our own product release. And the testing is limited to a couple handful of distributions. We test Ubuntu, Fedora, SUSE, and from the time to time, we add other distributions like Mandriva Linux, Kubernetes Linux, Debian, etc. But the Fedora, SUSE, and Ubuntu is something that I always test. And the focus is especially on enterprise Linux, because for Recall, our product is more office printers that used enterprise environment, so that's where our most focus on most efforts to. And during our testing, we have fixed release cycle, so during the testing start, we generally grab the latest available stable Linux distributions at the time. So from here, we try to get involved in some beta testing for distributions, but sometimes it's kind of difficult. Kind of when the distribution is not stable and a lot of changes, is very hard for us to do. So the minimum is they focus on stable distributions, and we try our best to use unstable ones, but that's not guaranteed. So next area we concentrate on, obviously, is our own driver. So every few months, we release new products, that means new drivers. Also, from time to time, we want to add new features to our existing drivers. So actually, last month, we updated all our couple dozen more paper sizes, including 12 by 18, etc.
Big ones.
And envelopes, etc.
And small ones.
Yeah.
Big ones and little ones.
Right. So, obviously, as Recall manufacturer, we want to concentrate on our own printer driver functionality. And the way of testing is mainly we
new job from command line and print to our real printer to verify the printout. That's the main way of doing that. We do have other ways to other coverage testing applications or some other aspect of the printing system, but our most main focus is our printer driver.
Which eliminates the problem you're looking at is the bug in the application, not the bug in the printer driver.
Yes, I'm going to go over there, yes. Because it's easier to justify the effort spent on testing Rico driver. And you go up testing all living printing subsystems, which will ensure users have a smoother experience. First is too costly. And secondly, I don't have all the expertise to test all different areas.
Right.
Let's say the ghost strip, this new ghost strip, it may affect printing. They don't really know how to test ghost strip. And then they have other popular libraries or something it's difficult for us to create a good test case and to test those areas. So our focus right now is on our drivers only. So, besides from specific to Rico, of course, we have test priority. We hate to release drivers with bugs. And the bugs only affect Rico, we will make sure it gets fixed before it goes out the door. However, there are defects that are not really created by Rico drivers. They existed in the printing subsystem, and we do our best to collaborate with the different subsystems with FileBot and try to follow up with them and see whether it's any quick way we can get its results or at least let them aware there's a problem there. But what we can do, we cannot go into the subsystem, the ghost script or popular to fix their problems. So we stop there and we try to work around problems if we can. That's the general approach we are using deploying for Rico driver testing. So is there any questions regarding how Rico test our drivers?
Can you give me an example, like what kind of workaround you made before for the driver?
What kind of workaround? Yes. So for example, let's say paper input tray. For the PCL driver, we use GoScript PLC XR mono driver to control our PCL driver. And for GoScript, you can specify in GoScript command line what kind of paper size do you want to use. It's not always works. And also, when you specify the page size, they may sometimes can render the correct paper size, but when you send a PCL command, you insert correct PCL command to control, tell printer, okay, this job is legal. This job is 11x17. GoScript, in some versions, they always put a letter. It's something that don't really recognize. So what they do is we do a screen rip, we gather rendered image out from GoScript, and we do some manipulations for the binary file they generate to insert the correct page selection.
So you're doing a workaround, not telling the user here's how to work around.
We don't want to tell the user how to work around if we can help it.
Right.
So we try to shield the user from all the glitches in the printing subsystem.
Yes, so we verify that our drivers work, and then we report the bug to the appropriate people.
And then you try and figure out a way to do a workaround that's not user visible.
Yeah. So we don't want to try to fix our drivers.
No, right.
Also, sometimes they also work with different subsystems to contribute patches. We don't have expertise in all the areas, so it's hard for us to contribute fixes for every component. We do our best. No question?
Okay.
next, I talk about how Ricoh tests, and I'm going to talk about how, what kind of problems we found during our testing. So at least we have a couple of defects we found during our testing, and the defects, as you see, we found those defects to different parties. And the majority of the problem we found during our testing is not Ricoh's problem. Obviously, Ricoh probably fixed that already. So,
you didn't have to do a bug report if it was a Ricoh problem. You just fix it.
No, I think that I'm the highest from here. Yeah. So the problem here, the left, is what problem we cannot fix. And I think Theo is doing a good job on the Linux, monitor Linux forum. If he sees some user complaining or problem in his Ricoh, and he doesn't know how he does it, and we miss it, he will let us know. Oh, hey George, here's a problem. Do you know the problem? How can you help the user? And we usually try our best to figure out what problem it is, and if needed, update our driver to fix the defect, or we tell the appropriate parties and start correct back to the appropriate subsystem. So still many problems we found, you know, our testing over the years, you know. And that leads me to think, oh, maybe in the Linux printing subsystem, we need a better coverage as a whole. Not only, so only for printer vendors, only ourselves, we cannot guarantee user a good printing experience. Okay.
So thank you.
So as I said, in recent years, there have been lots of improvements or changes in the Linux printing subsystem. They have new GoScript, they have new wonderful PDI workflow, and MagicRib always update to include new features, and also they have new features like driver distribution independent driver packages, automatic driver downloads, etc. There's a lot of new things. And for printer manufacturers, when they see changes, they say, oh, does that affect us? Does that change the test, how does that module is tested? I'm sure that the GoScript or MagicRib or Popular, whenever they make their changes, their module is well tested. But the thing is, for the printing, it's a workflow. Many modules are involved in the chain of the printing.
Right.
So even if you test one module thoroughly, doesn't necessarily give you a guarantee that you'll work smoothly with other parts of the printing subsystem. So maybe there's some integration tests we need to do, or whatever other tests we need to do. Next slide, please. So here I just listed some user scenarios. So a Linux user, they typically do two things when it comes of printing. One thing is to set up printer queue. Another thing is to print a printer queue. So, for setting up printer queue, it includes a few steps. One step is to do printer discovery. One step is to after printer discover using either SMP or IPP or whatever protocol, USB, and they want to search for a printer driver. If the driver is inboxed, or the driver is on like some open printing repository, or Fedora repository somewhere. You need to find the driver somewhere and download the driver and install the driver. That's part of setup printer queue. And for the part of printing, when you have more parts, like first application, they usually print from applications. OpenOffice, Firefox, or text editor, Gedit, K-Write, etc. And the first application to generate the print data, and then the print data goes through the printing subsystem, goes through the filter chain. Either it's PDI workflow filter chain or the legacy PostgreSQL filter chain, goes through the filter chain. And the printer driver actually is one of the last steps that the data goes through. And of course, final step is transfer data to the physical device. And we think CAP has done a good job on data transporting part. And CAP in general is because it has been around for many years, from CAP 1.0, 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, 1.4. It has been pretty stable in terms of trust part. But other part, I don't always park testing. So what we do here is printer driver. We test printer drivers. And during the process, testing drivers, we may cover here and there a little bit, but we do not have a systematic way of testing other parts.
Well, it's hard to do when the applications are all GUI applications. They're unique.
Right.
It's hard to do automatic testing and that kind of
exactly
originator.
Right. And so for all, let's see. So what I'm saying here is, Rico only tests the printer driver model. The focus testing on printer driver model. That's not enough to guarantee user a smooth printing experience. Also, other module also needs testing. It's part of distribution testing when we put different modules together. And I need to understand, from Rico's point of view, how other parts are tested. And for example, how different institutions, when they release new, like Ubuntu 11.4, 11.10, how do they test? And applications, like you know, new like PDF viewer application, when they print, how do they test file that generates for the print screen, it can be tested by print to the printer. So that's something I want to learn from here. And hopefully we can find a way to collaborate to see how we can do better for the testing. We do have some ideas on how maybe there's a couple of ways we can improve that. So one way is just basically three layers, application, printing workflow, and printer drivers. If either layer should do some testing, that means as much as possible make sure their printing output, their output is good for printing, good for printing. So that would really help because for us, we spend a lot of time debugging problems not generated by Rico printers, or Rico drivers, but rather the printing subsystem issues. And I think also it's also beneficial to applications because we upgrade a version of your Open Office, the new version, and then suddenly the same document used to be able to print, now cannot print, it's not acceptable to users too. So what we think is maybe a good way we can think of, I can think of, is, or Jeremy, me and Jeremy can think of, is our reference test suite. So what we do is, maybe we have a collection of documents, let's say OpenOffice, some HTML, web pages, PDF images, so everybody can contribute, with whatever, basically code can contribute, whatever document we use to test. And maybe other companies can also put all the files they found in the past, which could create a problem in the past, put them together as one collection, and then provide it openly to anybody to download. So applications in OpenOffice, let's say, they upgraded their printing subsystem, printing part, or they can use documents here, just load document and any Postgres printer, any good Postgres printer that's relatively stable or robust. So in that case, they don't need to go into testing for against Rico printers or testing against Kyocera printers or HP printers, just use any printer they have because they don't have all the printers. For one thing,
they never will.
Right.
Printer vendors have lots of printers, although never all the ones they wish they had in the past.
Right.
But application vendors and distribution packagers have far less printers available and have hard time getting budget to go buy the newest version of printer.
Exactly.
Right.
So we want to make sure they at least have a Postgres printer.
Right.
Because Postgres really is, because we don't have, even if they are using PDF workflow, we really don't have really a PDF printer. And for the printing workflow filter chain, like PDF, with all those PDF new PDF workflow filters, same thing. They can use a Postgres printer, plus a collection of documents, like Postgres, PDF, those documents could be somewhere we have in the past, from command line, or from the application who generates those documents. So we can build up this collection. And we provide these collections to the print, to the printing subsystem, primarily for linear distribution, and provide this one to application vendors. So in that case, and the optical printer, for printer manufacturer, they also use the same kind of PDF files or Postgres files. Mm-hmm. Test our printer using our own device and our Postgres printers, PCL drivers, or Raster drivers, to make sure we do this kind of testing. Mm-hmm. So in that case, I really do some testing, and I ask Ivory to do any testing for other people to cover his own stuff. So you mean probably will make the, hopefully will make Linux users printing equipment much smoother, because they can, as printer manufacturer, they cannot do it alone.
Yeah, it would be good if the various application builders ever hit print, so they didn't get the example Joe mentioned earlier this week about in F-Spot, if you hit print, the whole application crashes. You know, I mean, that's the worst case, but the nearer term is it prints, but it prints wrong, you know, and yeah, because they don't, they tend not to focus on testing that at all, that
so
print still works.
Exactly. So what I'm saying is, if we can provide a way to make it easier for application vendors or for linear distribution to test.
Right.
It gives them a spread of like a, let's say, 50 files.
Yeah.
What you need to do is just print the 50 files and see whether it's good.
Open all these files, print them.
Right. That's all you need to do. So
if anything breaks, let someone know in some open printing outfit or whatever common bug space that can then just, you know, examine what's the problem and distribute it to the the correct bug system.
I don't know other how other printer manufacturers have.
I only know how GhostScript has, the GhostScript project.
Uh-huh.
They have a testing facility. They collect files from bug reports which caused problems and got fixed. And there, in this collection are even some files which I have collected from Ubuntu bug reports and forwarded to GhostScript. And they have a cluster of servers, something like 6 servers, and when you do an SVN commit, subversion commit to the repository, the testing is triggered automatically, and in something from something like 1 hour or 2 hours, about 10,000 of files are passed through the new subversion snapshot of GhostScript, and as all results are logged. And so one can really find out when something breaks in which subversion patch it happened.
That's good to know. So.
And they have sometimes rolled back when a subversion snapshot fails, especially if it does not even compile.
Oh,
yeah. is it possible for printer vendors to get that testing software so we can do our own tests on, say, a printer that's attached to a roll port?
Yes, one should ask them, but this testing suite is mainly the performance of GhostScript, so whether GhostScript renders a file correctly, is fulfilled, whether this works.
So at least they can
it is mainly GhostScript is compiled, and then a list of files, all the files are passed through GhostScript. And it is compared whether the resulting file, which is often not a standard format, differs to the version which came out on the previous test run from the previous commit. So to see whether the commit causes differences.
Right, so I think the thing they can do is they use the same subset of test files to test all drivers. In that case, probably their coverage, Postgres or PDF, has more coverage than the collection they have.
Maybe it's more, well, it sounds like they have a lot of files.
Right.
Which they have collected from bug reports that, hit corners and edges.
Right.
Yeah. And recently they have even added to the test suite that files
are output with a CUPS-Raster device, so that differences in the output of the CUPS-Raster device are also found. Because mostly they use the our output devices like PNG, PNMs, these ones which produce common graphics formats, to mainly test the interpreter.
I can speak about how printing testing is done in Fedora. And what we do is, it's not for every release, but it's but we've done it a few times now, is we have these test days in the run-up to a release. So we did one for Fedora 15 for printing. And the idea is that anyone, mainly developers, but also a large group of testers, come along and everyone's in the same IRC channel, and they're running through the same group of tests and any tests they can think of themselves. And it's all, sort of all areas from configuring printers to printing documents. And there are some test documents, but it's maybe two or three, it's a handful. You know, it's not extensive at all. Basically, if there are any problems at that stage, the developers are on hand to help out with identifying what the problem is and finding the bug. And some test documents that I've found most useful myself have been there's two of them actually. The first one is you've got a three-page document, PDF or OpenOffice document or whatever it is, but it's three pages, and it doesn't really matter what's on the pages, but what you want to do is print two copies of that document in duplex. And this tests the layer between the application and the printing dialog, and between the printing dialog and CUPS, and between CUPS and raster format, and then all the way through to the back end, to check that what you get on the, from the printer is the correct number of pages, because a common bug is that the page three of the first copy is duplexed onto page one of the second copy. And also, does it even come out in duplex? Did the duplex option make it all the way to the back end? And the second test document that I've realized the importance of this week is having just a simple landscape document. Does printing in landscape work? Because it turns out that it's not something that people seem to test a great deal. So there's things that I've...
And the multiple copy duplex can easily be broken if an application tries to do the page management, which means NUP and selected pages and right. such things by itself, instead of letting CUPS doing it. And then there are two instances of page management, and this can mess the stuff up.
No, actually, yes. It's
like events or OpenOffice.
The duplex for collated copies, multiple copies collated, non-collated, this area that has so many problems. Both PostScript drivers, TCL drivers, the IMA drivers, you would think the simple feature would work, but unfortunately, that area is most problem.
It's simple to describe, it's not so simple to implement.
Another area we are thinking is, I think somebody in the past have mentioned that before. Mainly, I've got...
I think Glenn brought up.
Right.
A couple of years ago.
Right. So, because doing manual testing is still time-consuming, and it's not feasible to do it every time you update, when you check into Git repository or SV repository. Instead, we can have some fully automated testing, like the one Tim mentioned with GhostScript. Never checking something, automatically run some testing, at least to make a minimum guarantee that at least the driver works. So in that case, it might also help in some extent to eliminate the obvious problems.
And test the driver in the context of the print chain rather than entirely freestanding. Well, I understand why you test it freestanding. You want to make sure, but But if we then had this collection of files and we could print to a file through the whole print chain,
exactly.
Then you wouldn't have the graphic application, but you would know that below the graphic application,
right.
The end application, the whole print chain still worked with the new version of the driver, or the new version of GoScript, or the new version of Cups Filter, or whatever.
Right. So one defect we found is printing 460K PDF file and it turns out to be like 90 megabytes.
Yeah, I saw that.
So, so that kind of
problem. Users noticed that.
Probably can be captured by this kind of testing mechanism.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And also, if like submit job and if you get a file only like a couple bytes, that's also not right.
Right. Yeah, there are no print formats that could possibly yield just a few bytes of output.
Exactly. I'm here to want to discuss with you guys because everybody here is based probably is expert in the printing area and everybody has some very good ideas, so I want to see whether there's any way we can collaborate. Towards the end of my presentation, and I'm hoping we can open up some discussions to see how we can do better to make sure users have best printing experience. And the number one bug in Ubuntu is printing, right?
What?
The number one bug in Ubuntu is like the best experience, right? Ever since we work, print should work.
Just work.
Just work, yeah.
Yeah, just work.
Right. All right.
Thanks.
So, it sounds like GoScript has a really extensive set of test files. So rather than rehosting those on Open Printing Database, maybe we could talk with Michael and GoScript people about just posting a link from Open Printing that says, here's an extensive repository of test files. And then we could also, on Open Printing, host a repository that any manufacturer or any tester or even any smart user could send a file up and say, here's a file
that doesn't print.
here's a file that doesn't print. And because capturing them from bug reports is probably good. I mean, then we can look into it and say, well, maybe it's a badly formed file, but, you know, because that could be one of the problems. It's not conformant PostScript. I've seen that. But that way we could, you know, manufacturers could contribute from their various own, you know, unit testing and release, product ship, QA groups could contribute test files that they knew were useful because they were complicated, because of the complexity of the document. That has been known to break things, even when it's legitimate, but it's too complex. I mean, sometimes it just plain is too complex, and if you don't have enormous amounts of memory, you can't render it. But and so we could collect those. But then, to going to the testing, the whole print chain, it seems like collaborating and posting either scripts on Open Printing Database that could be used to test the whole printing workflow except the application. But still, then we could encourage the application developers computer time, if you don't have to manually submitted is relatively cheap anymore. It'd be okay to test 1,000 files or something before you did a subversion commit of your own little module in the application so that you didn't break the application. And you may think that your module has nothing to do with printing, but it does because it changes something in the way the application holds the source format, the meta format of the document.
So if we use like a GoScript as the one that validates the data, is it possible as publications, you just submit jobs, print like the open office document, and then they'll generate PDF or PostScript depending on version, and then they feed that TDL Photoshop into Scopestrip, and we capture the errors to see. So at least they will know, okay, when they pass through the application, they will know, okay, I generate this PDF file when printing this document. And now when I go through the, when the file goes through Ghostscript as a virtual printer,
right,
and I'll see, oh, here it goes to this with iOS. Do I have, is it Ghostscript?
Is that,
it,
that look like the Ghostscript bug, or does it look like mine?
Right.
Yeah. And usually you can tell if Ghostscript hasn't changed and you changed.
Right.
It's probably using the application.
Because I understand printing using a physical printer is always a burden.
Right, this has always been the problem. You want to test the whole print chain, except you want to capture the output to a file because you don't want to put spots on paper and you don't want to start moving markers.
Yeah. So is there anything we can develop a virtual printer? Actually, it's feeding to Ghostscript, and then Ghostscript will check Ghostscript log as to that if it sees any errors, we mark it, copy them on window, whatever, to let it, to invisible file applications, and to help the filter chains to know, okay, do we get a good printing stream?
Yeah, do we get good content from the application? Which would then be helpful when trying to identify a bug report that you get. Says Rico, this driver is no good, there's a problem from a user, and okay, so give me your source document. How did you generate this? What application did you use? So that's a little bit costly, but if you had the ability to fire up the application, send it to the virtual printer through Ghostscript, and then say, no, you see it's broken right here. Not our driver problem. It would at least say, you can't do that for everyone all the time, but at least it would be a way. It would even be eventually a way that a relatively capable end user could do some better discrimination of where to report the bug. So it wasn't printer driver manufacturers getting bug reports for OpenOffice. For bugs that ultimately are in OpenOffice, or even in Ghostscript because something got through. Versus 10 years ago, it's much less likely that the released version of Ghostscript, in fact, has a rendering error. Much less likely.
Right, Ghostscript have problems. Probably all the PCL drivers, Raster drivers, they probably also have problems.
Right, yeah. Right.
That's a good idea.
So this seems like something that we could try and talk about over email and maybe a few teleconferences about how to proceed with trying to get open printing, you know, to host some scripts or at least some approaches. You know, here's sort of like the how to build drivers DDK instructions that says, here's a method that any manufacturer could use that would probably make your testing more robust, because after you do the direct command line test of the print driver, you could, you know, step up and you could say, okay, start the whole print chain as though it were an application, but still from the command line, run the whole print chain through, but print to a file, don't, you know, print to the device, and see if it still seems to yield the same result, because it should.
I'd just like to add one area that also affects us is if we have new releases for popular distros and they tend to upgrade the printing subsystem. So we got problem calls from users that their printing doesn't work anymore.
Right.
So it's something that also, it's not something that the driver changes because we did not change it. That's an old release of our driver. So we tend to discriminate or isolate a problem. Is it something that Ghostscript does, the IDM workflow change, or something in the application layer? So if we can have essentially the idea of the print school testing that we send a job, then check at the, what we care usually is at the endpoint at the conversion layer, if we check the raster, if it's really layout it correctly, so we can have a
you can run each time that the printing subsystem is correct. Then you can easily submit subreports, which report the change fail.
And
we also do that every time, so it's something that we can also contribute.
Well, and the distributions could start doing a lot more than really minor ad hoc testing and a printed change before they do an update in the distribution. If they had the same, I mean, just like applications, the distributions could use, you know, a large set of test files with a fairly exhaustive automatic test that just kicked out and said, okay, so here's the five files that are suspicious because the size is wrong, or, you know, or the, or a quick grep through it shows that there are some missing tags that should have been in that output format.
So,
how Ubuntu is testing the, I know Ubuntu has been very aggressive adopting new technologies, and Teal is probably the best guy working in Ubuntu to make sure we have the best user printing experience. How Ubuntu is testing printing subsystems?
The printing subsystem has no real systematic testing scheme. It is, I'm getting bug reports, I'm trying to reproduce them, and I also do the basic testing when I upload a new system config printer, creating a queue, plugging a printer, whether the queue comes automatically, and things like that. But there's no automated or systematic testing, unfortunately.
Right. So hoping that we can work out at least a plan to make some good automatic testing available, so it makes it easier for distribution applications to use. What you should know is it's so scattered around. Everybody is doing their own testing. I know they're doing their own best effort to testing, but if we can provide a tool or a collection of test files, it really probably help them so everybody can do better in terms of more testing coverage, better printing experience.
Thank you for a good presentation. Yeah, this is a problem for every manufacturer testing print drivers. And even if in the golden future our children's children actually have generic PDL drivers that have some plug-in mechanism or something for vendor extensions, it's still going to be a problem because the whole printing chain and the distribution may, for some arcane reason, fall back to an earlier version of GoScript and mess us all up because they fall back unknowingly to an unstable 8.x version of GoScript that had a couple of major known bugs. But printing industry people would know, but the distribution QA people don't know anything about because they're not printing people. Because I know I watch some of these bug reports, and the first question is, what version of GoScript are you writing? What version of Cups are you writing? What version of this are you writing? What version of that are you running? What detailed kernel version are you running? Since the kernel keeps moving around like shifting sands under us all. I didn't want to ask Jeff that question, but I still don't understand why the Unix kernel developers don't commit to more stable kernel APIs.
This I also really do not understand, and this is one of the major problems of Linux.
Well, it is. It's a major problem for every single application and every single infrastructure builder. And look and feel is never going to win users. Stability is going to win users. And, you know, there's Win32 APIs that are 18 or 20 years old. They're not really there anymore, but there's a skin over them that does correctly emulate them, and they don't drop them because they don't want to break existing applications. And the same thing is true for Mac. And it just seems like there's no concept in the kernel community that instability at the kernel, major eights like you give, is rewriting threads three times in 8 years completely from scratch with different APIs is a problem. But it is a problem because it means that the concept of binary compatibility is always at risk. And the idea that the user always will go get the newest piece of software or the newest piece of hardware to solve the problem, that is not an answer to an end user. That is never the acceptable, here's how to fix your bug, just download and install this major new release. No, I don't think so. Most users will not accept that statement any more than they'll accept, okay, this problem will go away if you go from XP to Vista. The operating system and the major applications cost more than the entire piece of hardware. They're not going to upgrade kernels. And the same, it may be feasible for an advanced expert user to put a new unit Linux release on their system, but very few do. They do it when they get new hardware on a new system, and with rare exceptions, they don't do it after that. They want to break things that already work. They don't care about getting the new features. They care about not breaking the existing features. Like suddenly their PDF viewer stops working, kind of like a high-profile failure. They can't read the instructions for how to do the rest of the setup of their system.
I remember for the RSP, they have RSP testing built.
Yes.
So the application can run that test to verify that whether it's RSP compatible. Is it possible we can build?
We could move a piece in to the LSP.
I don't think if they put in the LSP test, but got a different spot. Printing test.
Okay. It says you run the LSP test suite if it works. Then if you also run this printing subsystem test suite and it works, then at least your core functionality and your printing will work.
I have instructions for longer time in the procedure for making LSP packages. Also, telling to run LSP up check, which is the application checker, and to run cups test PPD, which is the checker for the PPD files. These are command line tools. It must be possible to create scripts for automatic tests using them.
So, and this is just another dimension of testing, but another thing that you can do for automated testing is run the CUPS IPP tool against your printer as part of the release cycle. If it breaks, you got a bug. Maybe your user didn't hit that bug yet, but sooner or later someone will, probably sooner, and improving the quality of IPP implementation improves that last step, and the cup spooler has got this job, and it passes it on, it goes, oh, the printer supports IPP, every network printer ship for the last 5 or 6 years does, without exception. Then I can safely forward this job by IPP instead of falling back to doing port 9100 or LPR, which CUPS does. doesn't want to do in the spooler, because at that point it becomes print and pray again. There's no back channel, there's no control, there's no job ticket, there's no user intent being bound except being hidden in the PDL. And the reliability and integrity goes way down. I really encourage people to think about adding that to their automated testing as you're, you know, coming towards releasing a new model. Go ahead and run IPP tool against it. As Mike said when he first talked about IPP tool almost a year ago at a PWG meeting, he's never seen a printer that passed it first crack. He's seen thousands of them.
And so the best IPP implementation is probably CUPS itself.
Is CUPS itself, because it's so heavily exercised and practically every feature and every command and so on is regularly exercised, whether it's a user command or an admin command, and it gets regression tested and the bugs get caught. And Mike, you know, it used to be called IPP test and it got renamed IPP tool when it really made it really freestanding and you didn't need to load the CUP subsystem at all to use it. Because this is something, you know, you can run from the command line, it gives you output to a log, you can add additional tests. For instance, George, if you have a RICO IPP attribute extension that's, you know, not a standard IPP attribute, it's trivially easy to add them to the test scripts or to write another test script that you change in your testing. And IPP tool will do this for you, and it will, like, check data type, and it will check expected values or in range if it's the, you know, integer kind of range. Mike did a beautiful job of thinking out the scripting language. So there is a very good manual page on it, which I have only ever once looked at and said, very good manual page, but I never used it. I just looked at Mike's existing scripts and modified them as necessary. In the particular recent instances, it was to go delete operations that I knew failed so I could proceed. But when I was experiencing that, I sent a note to Mike, and the same week he'd been thinking about the same thing, that was to put this continue it if possible. So try to go past errors. I mean, if you didn't create the print job, you can't go past that error, right? Because the subsequent operations will all fail because the job ID is no good. But try to go past errors in the response that are bearable and don't break proceeding to the subsequent test. Because what the tool does is to start with get printer attributes and then immediately start going into job operations. Well, it does some more printer operations, but it basically kind of, you know, creates a job and then it does some printer and job operations against that job. But it is exhaustive. It covers every required and every optional attribute ever defined in any of the 30 IETF or PWG IPPs. So no individual company could afford to write such an exhaustive tool. And since Mike uses it and has used it for years for CUPS regression testing, the tool's pretty darn stable. And he's got IPP1.1, IPP2.0, and IPP2.1 test suites that are exhaustive and complete. And he has one in progress for 2.2 only because CUPS itself doesn't quite yet have all of 2.2 conformance. It does have the document objects and some core stuff, but there's like a few attributes. It's nearly 2.2 conformant. But I know that in the course of working on IPP 2.0 second edition, the three new IPP version levels that are an easy way for a client to tell what the IPP capabilities are supported without reading a lot of attributes and analyzing. There was quite a few vendors in the room who informally said, I'm reasonably sure I have printers that now conform to IPP IPv2.0 and intend to have printers that conform to IPv2.1, which is basic, you know, mid-range workload printing. All of the network printers, it would be suitable to support 2.1. 2.1 recommends but does not require the document object, so the multi-document job comes into 2.2 and some more admin operations do. But still, it's like, it's just a really good thing to run really early, even when your new code is only running in a simulator and there is no printer yet because you're still waiting for somewhere else in the world to send you the parking to take the printer. Really help avoiding the 4 months delay at the last moment in the release when you find a really critical bug.
So I'm looking at the cups.org software page here.
And if you look
and I see IPP tool 1.5.
Yep.
And
that's the latest release thereof.
Okay.
It's not tied to IPP versions.
Okay.
And it has binaries for Windows, Mac, and Linux. And Mike builds them and tests them on all platforms before he ever even commits them. And the Windows one actually brings down the MSC library to a high enough version so that it avoids the made a library call, but you never install the C compiler if you don't have, you know, a late enough, it's an older version of Windows or whatever, you don't have the latest version of the C library. So it carries with it, or it actually does it gracefully. It will put the runtime library there. And it puts it right into Windows/system. So it just works. In my experience, it's a really nice tool. It's easily installed. And I know both our Samsung developers and Samsung test engineers really like it. Now we have to get upper management to pay attention. So when we report an error, but that's different. But I mean, the engineers at least know if it's an error, I can trust that it's probably not a bug in IPP tool. It's probably really a bug in my printer or a bug in my driver.
I'll be adding it.
It's just a really cool. I know some of the Sharp people and some of the Xerox people within the divisions, within the, you know, model families are now using it, and I think some others are just because they're getting email questions about it. It's a neat tool. And when you take a look at the script, you go, oh, cool. This is really, because it can say, I have sent this. So now when I do this get job attributes, I expect this particular value or one of these three values in this attribute coming back, and you can, in an actually readable way, stick that into the script. And and you can tailor it. You could take, you know, vendor extension IPP operations. I know Xerox has some. I think maybe Ricoh does. Anyway, some vendors do. You know, you can, it's cool to use even to test private extensions for attributes or even operations successfully. Maybe not operations. Certainly attributes. Maybe not vendor operations. No. Probably it's a matter of the CUPS library doesn't know how to marshal private operations. But it does know how to marshal and unmarshal private attributes. And, you know, as long as they're properly declared. And, you know, it runs through thousands of details, a whole lot of effort. And with the coming of IPP everywhere and the coming of cloud printing IPP bindings, it's going to get more and more important, because it's been important within the Linux printing chain and the Mac printing chain for a long time that CUPS is internally an IPP engine. But it's going to get a lot more important that printers really support that, because, you know, in the past, by default, you know, a Windows printer that made port 9100. What happened by default? You could make it an IPC printer, but you kind of had to root around for 10 minutes with Google before you could figure out how to do that, because it was not made very obvious. That may change in the future with Microsoft's interest, expressed interest in playing in the IPP everywhere in cloud printed ballpark.
IPP is testing the printers. So right now, we have been testing printing filter chains. We need to test printers. I mean, test applications. So I think we talk about using the GoScript to test the filter chains, right?
Right.
For the packages, like how to discover printers, how to find the right packages. For those areas, I don't know any sort of how that could be done.
I think Mike dropped off, but for IPP everywhere, I think Mike's planning not to extend IPP tool, but to have a parallel tool that will test the standard discovered protocols and say, okay, you told me, you know, this printer, this IP address, and I'm going to go find, is it in the LDAP? Is it in some discoverable LDAP directory? Can I find it by SLPP2? Can I find it by Bonjour? And does it advertise the correct parameters in each of those that correspond to the IPP capabilities? Because it can talk to the IPP printer and ask it, you know, via in-band get printer attributes, what are your capabilities? And then it can say, aha, not advertised correctly in Bonjour.
Doing a pretty good job in testing the core modules. What I mean is like a Java package, let's say they make of open printing or Fedora made a Java package and putting them in the repository. How do we as a printer manufacturer know, okay, those Java packages are tested? How the testing is done is and even if we make the Java packages, how should we test to make sure that it works?
Right.
Anybody have any input on that topic?
Yeah, you send an email to George.
So what they have been doing is they do drivers as fast as they can and upload drivers. And then somebody will, based on his Java, make a package.
Right. But if the distribution made a if the distribution made a package, what if something went wrong at the packaging stage in Fedora? There was nothing wrong with the driver. There was nothing wrong with the GoScript. There was nothing wrong with the actual printer, but it still doesn't work because it got broken in the packaging. And that seems to be an area that it seems to be an area that at least we need to work with the distributions about encouraging them not to just go run scripts and make 10,000
drivers. Not only how to package the driver, but also how to map the final printer, how to know if they get the right driver package.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing is to, as we improve the quality and completeness of 1284 device IDs that are presented by actual printers by the various network protocols or USB, then we also need to get Till and Tim Waugh's good work on fuzzy matching for device ID, I'll say upstream, but I know it's the wrong word, but I mean into the distribution package testing activity so that they don't do naive matching of device IDs, which tends to yield picking the wrong driver when there aren't many drivers. And they do. I mean, the ones that I've seen, you know, they don't get an exact match. They fall back and strip some more stuff off. Well, eventually you're going to get an exact match, but that's not going to be a very good one. That's not the right way to do it, and more intelligent, you know, this case normalization and normalizing the presence or absence of hyphens according to what it says on the box and what it says. case of the printer, which can differ, is really important in order to make sure that you don't start stripping too much stuff off so you've fallen all the way back to what's an Epson stylus. There are a lot of Epson stylus printers, and picking an arbitrary driver based on that, that fallback matching is not a good solution. Is it lunchtime?
Yes.
Okay. For those on the phone, we're about to hang up. We will resume at 1:30 with color management. Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
See you at 1:30.
Thank you.
Yeah.